Hail, cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm fine, Josh, but let's be clear. Your name is not Josh, it's Al, and I am Jazz Hughes. Alan Jazz Hughes coming at you from the Always Cheating podcast. Of course, we got our tickets to Brighton v. West Ham on StubHub, and if Jazz and Al Hughes, if you're out there listening, thank you for the great seats. We really enjoyed your view of the Amex.
That's true. A visit that was almost tainted by just how badly we had to go to the bathroom. It was, I will never be able to separate the Amex Stadium in Brighton from my own deep and piercing desire to find the nearest bathroom. It was so slow moving. It was ridiculous.
That is the experience of a traveling fan, right? So for those of you who don't know, Josh and I are just back from our London, UK trip, 4 matches in 4 days, second of which was to Brighton. And we traveled with a pack of rowdy West Ham fans, all terrific.
Hey, we were drinking beer ourselves. We were having fun.
Yeah, but I feel like when you're commuting on the train, first know where the exit is. Second, know where the bathroom is.
Right. So it was. That match itself was probably the least exciting of the four that we went to. We went to Chelsea VD on Thursday. But by the way, just as a quick note, I'm aware that not everyone is so enamored with us that they want to hear like all the ins and outs of our trip to London. So we're going to do a special London section at the end of the podcast, right? We've got like a lightning round of London trip related questions. So, we'll just talk about it for a second here, but then if you want,
our travels do not hold the mind of the listener the way in which like an episode of Parts Unknown would, as much as we'd like.
Exactly.
That.
Not Anthony Bourdain level, but it was great. I mean, we went to Stamford Bridge, we went to the Amex, we went to, Wembley. Yeah. And then we went to Craven Cottage looked about 190 years older than the other three that we went to. It was the contrast between Wembley to Craven Cottage. It was, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because I love an old stadium. Tiger Stadium in Michigan, where we grew up, was a great old stadium, very much like Craven Cottage.
The ghosts that we sat next to at Craven Cottage were very cheerful, I will say that much.
Exactly. But not they weren't a big fan of who was the player that the ghost
Anguissa,
was yelling at?
Anguissa. There was an old guy over my right shoulder who was just terrorizing Anguissa from the stands all match until he was pulled off. And then he followed that up by saying to the entire section, as Fulham was just getting pummeled by Arsenal, "All right, Fulham fans, if I told you right now that David Moyes would save us from relegation, would you take it?" That was a really dark thought for everyone.
It was a dark time. Yeah, the match got pretty dark fast, as we'll talk about later. But I think, if I have it a bite, by the way, a quick shout out to Tom Cantle, Nick Wright, James Quirrell, just and Rosie, of course. A few people that we had a little extra time with on the trip and who helped us, find our way around London. It was great to we met a ton of people at the meetup on Saturday night too. And the guys from the Planet FPL podcast and just an FPL chance. I don't want to start naming people because I'm gonna forget somebody. I don't want anybody to feel like I skipped them, but we met a ton of great people that night.
Absolutely, we did. It was really overwhelming, the people who came out to Edinburgh Castle. And then we kind of moved the party off to the World's End, which was a fitting spot for us to end our meetup. So great suggestion.
I was going to say, 5 days, 4 matches, great trip. I bought a barber jacket, which I was very excited about. I could do a whole podcast on the purchase of this barber jacket. But Brandon, if I have one abiding memory of this trip, one memory that I'm going to hold on to for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
It is you and I late at night at the bar, and suddenly you burst into an Irish accent and start talking about Conor McGregor, and I don't know what is happening. I don't know why you did it. I don't know where it came from, but it was amazing. It was suddenly you were talking. Was it even an Irish guy you were talking to? I don't know, but you were talking about Conor McGregor in an Irish accent.
If a strange man who is about a foot taller than you at 1 a.m. comes up to you and starts talking about Ultimate Fighting, you do whatever you can to blend in. And that was just my survival instinct.
Right. Do you have one abiding memory of the trip, Brandon?
Yeah, absolutely. My one abiding memory is you and I at halftime at Stamford Bridge during the Europa League match, Chelsea-Vidi. And you got the beers from the from the little station where they, you never see this before, the jet stream that shoots the beer up through the bottom of the glass. You pull it off the jet stream and there's this little cap that gets sucked in and creates a seal. Yeah, very efficient. Yeah. No foam. So I'm about 2/3 of the way through this beer and I'm looking at the bottom of the cup. Like, how does this work? And I go to poke the little cap hole thing and I puncture it, allowing 1/3 of the beer to just spill out the bottom of the cup straight onto my feet. So to my left, this
just it took so long. It felt, I mean, it was like 1/3 of a beer, and yet it took like a full 2 minutes for it to unfurl. While the woman next to you looked on in complete disgust.
She looked on in disgust, but a guy to my right, he looked at me and he kind of snickered and he said, "You ain't the first, and you won't be the last." So
that was a good stadium. I was impressed with Stamford Bridge.
All right, so we had a great trip. More details to come at the end of the podcast, but let's just jump back into it. Into the actual FPL football. FPL Chancer asks this pretty broad question. It's a gut check. Good time to review your season so far. Are you happy with how it has gone, or do you have any regrets? So international break, heading into game week 9, do you see any major changes that you need to make to your squad starting in game week 9? Are you feeling pretty happy? And how much work did it take us to get to this point?
Yeah, I am feeling pretty happy. I mean, you know, I have burned the wild card already, but I have all the chips intact. I had a great week. I mean, I feel like we don't need to rehash game week 8. It's already a week ago, and you know, it feels like let's look ahead to game week 9. But I did finish on 85 points last game week, and I'm up to 14,700 in the world, which is probably the highest I've been this early in the season. In years, right? And so it's a very exciting feeling to be doing this well this early in the season. I'm sitting on 2 free transfers as well going into game week 9. And so,
everything's coming up, Josh, here.
Temporarily. Yeah, it's all going to fall apart. So enjoy it while it lasts. The key question here is Mo Salah, who, you know, obviously we'll be talking about more in a minute. But, you know, I feel pretty good. I mean, I don't really know what I would change. I mean, I guess there's a feeling that maybe Trippier gets dropped long term, possibly for Mendy, possibly for Robertson. You know, if Salah gets dropped, who does he get dropped for? I mean, you know, there's, you know, we have a million questions about KDB on this podcast, but, you know, I mean, can I really bring in KDB at 10 million, not knowing if he's truly ready to start playing yet for that team? Like, is he just going to slot right in as a starter? I mean, does he work his way back in with a couple substitute appearances? And then, even if I made that move, I mean, let's say that Salah's out for a week, right? If I make that move, I mean, Liverpool have great fixtures, so maybe it makes more sense just to go to Sadio Mane, right? Who's kind of the forgotten man here. Picked up an assist over the international break, I mean, for whatever that's worth. But Sadio Mane, which is kind of the original move that a lot of people considered before he kind of lost his form, $3 million cheaper. But even then, if I got that $3 million, I'm not sure where I would invest it. It still wouldn't be enough for me to upgrade Jimenez to Lacazette, you know. So I don't know. But so there's some different things that I'm considering. I like my team as a whole, though. How about you?
Yeah, I had a great start to the season, and I'm in good shape. I'm in the top 22K overall in the world. And yeah, like you, really couldn't ask for a better position at this point of the season. My problem is, I mean, if you asked me this 2 weeks ago, I would have said, I have no regrets. I've played this season perfectly as far as I'm concerned. But right now I have a really bitter taste in my mouth, and that's because of Ben Mee. I have made one mistake, and it was a big one, and it was turning an injured Mendy into Ben Mee for the Cardiff Huddersfield doubleheader for Burnley, and it blew up in my face, and it's put me in a situation where Ben Mee should have been Doherty or Trippier. That was the easy, obvious move, and I got clever and I overthink it. I overthought it. I overthunk it. and now here I am still sort of, I look at Ben Mee and I say, I'm now a move behind everybody else because Burnley have City coming up. He's dead weight on my team. And I'll just be chasing points to bring in who I should have brought in, be it Doherty or, Trippier, I agree with you. I think the Spurs wave has crested and I mean, not even talking about Kane, I think right. you got the points that you really bought when you bought Trippier, and now I think would be a smart time to consider moving him on to Liverpool or City premium defender. So, yeah, overall happy, but now I feel like I have my work cut out for me. So, that's where I feel I am going into game week 9.
Yeah, and I think that's a feeling that I think a lot of people have right now. I mean, I think that there's a consensus building around certain players to have. I mean, it feels like, you know, the differences are kind of at the margins right now, with maybe you have Richarlison, maybe you have Frazier. There's a couple different, maybe you have Madison. Ings, maybe you have Jimenez, you know. There's like a few different like kind of pivot points, you know. Matt Doherty, and by the way, I know that I'm mispronouncing his last name, and I'm just going to keep rolling with it. So sorry, everybody. Matty D. He's only owned it by 11.6% of managers. I mean, I don't know how somebody can pick up, was it 37, 39? He has 41 points in his last four games, and somehow he's still owned by 11.6% of managers.
Well, I don't think that's very fair to say. This is a Wolves defense that people rated the team Wolves going into the season, but the defense we didn't know what to make of. Doherty comes in and scores a glorious own goal, so that sets him back. People weren't rating him at that point, even though we did see that he was very active on the wing. But yeah, there are a lot of moves that people have had to make over the last couple of weeks, and up to more than 11% ownership. I think that's still big for a promoted team right back.
Well, big for promoted team right back. I mean, but that removes all the context from it. This is a guy who is on a team that's shown itself to be pretty strong defensively, and he's bombing forward all the time. I mean, I could definitely see not having him at the start of the season. I didn't have him at the start of the season, but I feel like that clean sheet away to West Ham, picks up six, and then, you know, picking up 12 at home to Brighton in game week 5. I feel like that's when people, I don't know. I mean, granted, he was at like owned by like 1% a few weeks ago, and so he's picked up 10%.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. I'm saying the growth to 11+% is the growth that you're talking about.
Yeah, it just still feels a bit low to me, but fair enough. Please keep that ownership low. I mean, it's great for me. Like, I love that his ownership is that low, because he's an unbelievable fantasy asset at the moment. Even with some difficult fixtures to come, I think he's actually kind of a perfect, he's a perfect like third/fourth midfielder. You know, you can kind of play him in any fixture, because you can always, you know, possibly get an assist from him late in a match or something like that.
Yeah. All right. We're going to talk a lot more specifically about individual players, but I think the feeling I have now looking forward is fear and uncertainty. Like you were saying, Josh, we have known quantities at this point. This is Hazard season right now. This is a Salah troll season at the moment. But we have a lot of players who have played great roles for us, like Fraser or Madison or even Doherty. And it's unclear how far they will take us through the rest of the season. So I think now heading into game week 9, it's that point in the season where we're having to make harder decisions, if you know what I mean. So yep. I guess that's what we're going to try and parse in this episode is looking ahead. What are the hard decisions and how can we best sort of put it all in perspective?
Right. And Salah is the hardest decision of all. I think, you know, because we don't know exactly what the issue is there, I'm going to treat it like to the severity that I expect that it is, which is a mild injury that may keep him out of the Huddersfield match, but won't be a long-term issue, right? Yeah. I think that seems to be the consensus opinion. If you read like the Liverpool Echo or kind of, you know, search online or, you know, Ben Dinnery, like that seems to be the consensus. Although, you know, who really knows, right? I mean, we know he got sent home from the Egypt squad, that he's back in Liverpool now. So
This is the Egypt squad that he threatened to quit over the summer. This is not a squad that he loves playing for. So the sight of Salah saying, I don't want to go back on the pitch, I'm going to walk down the tunnel now. Yes, it could mean that he has an injury that's going to keep him out for a couple of weeks. But also, B, it could just be him saying, I don't want to be here anymore.
Wow, that's casting some major aspersions, Brandon. All right. Always cheating Super League. Let's read out the top 10. Why don't you read it, Brian? You've got a better voice than me. You start from the 10.
Starting from 10 with my booming voice. John McMahon at 10th place. 9th place, Martin Telhagen. 8th, it's Matt Frisky. Moving up to 7th place, Eric Neuhauser. 5th place, Dave G. Also tied in 5th place, Andrew McKinnon. 4th place, Nikolai Zugalin. And in 3rd place, it's Guy. That's a double name. I wonder where Guy hails from. In 2nd place, it's Luke Mitch Whaley. And still holding firm in 1st place, it's Richard Inkvist with a total of 618 points. I will note that Luke Mitch Whaley is just 1 point behind Richard with a huge game week score of 88.
Richard, we didn't talk about this, even though we saw this match at Wembley, but you know, Richard was one of the many who brought in Harry Kane in advance of that match, and captained him and was sort of suffered as a result of the 1 pointer for Kane. So tough spot there for a lot of managers. I actually don't know if we have a question about it, but I mean, if you had Kane right now, and I want to get into the proper section in a second here, but if you had Kane, you would just hold him, right? I mean, would you drop him after 1 week?
No,
I think you got to hold him.
Yeah, you have to back yourself. You have to back that play, and I think on this podcast we haven't shown a lot of love for Harry Kane. Neither of us have really been tempted to bring him in. But he's still a class striker. I mean, his problem is that he's looking a little ragged, but you have to back that play.
Yeah. I mean, I would even consider him as a possible captain away to West Ham in game week 9. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's every reason to think that he'll do well. It's unfortunate that he played a full 90 minutes in the
he just refuses Croatia to sit match. This man.
I know. It's so like someone's got to talk to him or just say no. Like, why is he playing in that match? They just don't need him.
Do you think it's like the movie Speed where, you know, if they stop the bus will explode? Like Harry Kane is, if he stops playing, he's just going to blow up.
I think that's probably how he feels, actually. I think he probably feels like he's got to stay in form, you know.
And but he's not like, in form. That's the whole thing. He's
but it's
not
like,
in
it's
form.
Like I know, but it's like the gambler's fallacy. You know, it's like this. It's like he keeps, you know, he keeps going out there, and he's like, you know, he's playing roulette, and he keeps betting on red, you know, and he goes out there, and it's just black, and he's like, it's going to be red next time. Just put me out there, coach. I'll score next time, you know.
right.
Yeah. So. A couple Patreon thank yous. New Volkswagen patron. Thank you to Stevens Williams. Thank you, Stevens. New Lord Sorloth patron. Thank you to Roy Moore. We have three new Ambicani patrons, Stephen Griffin, Jeff DeMasso, and Paul, the mysterious Paul with no last name. Thank you to the three of you. Brandon, we have our suicide pool contest, or perhaps survivor pool. I think suicide pool sounds cooler, but, you know, survivor pool, whatever. Starting in game week 10, this is a feature exclusive for our Patreon supporters. Anyone who joins the next 2 weeks can also take part in this. Basically, you pick one team each week, and if that team wins or draws, you survive to the next round, and you can't pick that team a second time. Right. So,
yeah, we're using a new site. And Josh, you sent me the invite earlier today. I've already gone in and made all my picks for the next 20 game weeks.
That's very optimistic.
But the site is cool. You can make all your picks if you want, and you can tweak them on the fly. So you're not I'm not committed to the full 20
in.
Weeks. Yeah, I'm not locked in.
Yeah. So I'll be sending an email out this week to all our Patreon supporters the information. That's a Patreon supporter at any pledge level, by the way. So that's a lot. That's a fun contest. And the winner of that will get a new Always Cheating t-shirt. And we just emailed all of our Volkswagen and producer supporters earlier today, Brandon. Now you did, that is, and got their shirt sizes. So t-shirts are coming out very soon.
Funny. We're sending out a lot of 4XL t-shirts. So we have the largest listenership out there. It's unreal.
It's really just, and very across the world too. It's a large listeners in every continent.
We're a big sleep shirt podcast. One last bit of housekeeping here. We have a new contest again for Patreon supporters with our friends at Starting 11, the daily fantasy app. They are sponsoring our retro kit contest. So if you're a Patreon supporter, you're in our Patreon FPL league. And at the end of each month, whoever for that month has the best FPL score So starting in October, at the end of October, whoever has the most points, our friends at Starting 11 are going to send you a free retro shirt of your choice from 3retro.com. So for that and more, just go to patreon.com/alwayscheating, and we welcome you there.
All right, Brad, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about what I think is the big question for this game week. Not that everyone is even on their wild card right now, but the question is, if you were on your wild card, what would your team look like going into game week 9? And I think by talking about that, we'll end up talking about Salah and Aguero and KDB and lots of other players. So take a break. We'll get right back. All right, Brandon, we're back. Part one, inspired by Anders Javi. If you were wildcarding right now, who would you have? We have a couple big picture questions that I want to talk about first. These are questions that we got from listeners, but I think they sort of feed into this wildcard question. So the first one is from Ishan Ghosh. It says, for those of us who have a wild card in hand, what's the best play? Do we take the plunge now with the Salah injury? Do we wait until the game week return of KDB, whenever that is? Or do we hold until game week 15 when Spurs fixtures turn?
I like this idea of Spurs fixtures turning. I don't think that my wild card would hinge on Spurs because they're not exactly in form right now. So I'm not sure right. that I would build my wild card decisions around game week 15. And I don't know if I still have my wild card now, which I don't, I think I'm holding, because the big question right now, the big move that you might be looking to make is Salah out. And there is no team surgery that needs to happen to get rid of Salah. This is a no-nonsense move if we need to make it. Now, of course, we are still waiting for a lot of information
right.
before we actually choose to drop him.
Is this a possible blessing in disguise, though, this Salah injury or whatever it is? I mean, is this the push that we all finally need? I guess, Brandon, I didn't want to do it, but I guess we're going to talk about Salah right off the bat because it has to be done, right? Okay. So, you know,
let me jump right in here and say, no, this is not what we needed, because I don't want to learn this lesson, Josh.
Okay.
I've stuck with Salah for too long. I deserve this. I deserve points from Salah. Okay. This isn't about you. This isn't about anybody else listening. This is about me.
Yeah. It's come up black 3 fixtures in a row. It's going to come up red on the next fixture, right? So we got to hold one more week.
I like the idea of finally an injury forcing our hand for something that's clearly not been working out the last couple of weeks. That's
4 to 5 game weeks.
Why does it have to happen right now, right before we have Huddersfield and Cardiff? The two fixtures in which the only two fixtures were, I mean, maybe Fulham in game week 12 that's coming up. So those are three out of the next four are the reason that you have a 13 million pound premium like Salah. Not now. I can't take it.
I don't want to drop him either. My preference would be to hold, and I don't know what – I honestly don't know what I'm going to do yet. And, you know, we'll wait a couple of days to find out how severe it is. I have to admit, I'm kind of – I mean, as much as I love Salah and I like this Liverpool team, if he was out for a couple of weeks, 4 weeks, let's say, I don't know, it would not – disappoint me too much. It would be like this like feeling that I've been having the last few game weeks, as so many of us have, of like, is it really a great idea to invest 13 million into a midfielder, you know, into someone who you may have just, I mean, he's obviously still a great player this year, but maybe it really was lightning in a bottle to a degree, you know, and maybe it was always unrealistic to expect him to get, you know, 25, 30 goals, and, you know, especially when he's not on penalties. And at 13 million, you need a very consistent returns, you know, to justify that cost. I mean, even, you know, you can get basically the same thing from Raheem Sterling for 2 million cheaper, you know, as we talked about in recent podcasts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's possible that you can get almost the same thing from Sadio Mane, who's 3 million cheaper. Yeah. So it's just a tricky thing. And I feel like the scales have kind of fallen from my eyes the last week or so. And, you know, I was holding on for so long, partially because just the statistics, you know, around him were fantastic, right? I mean, they pointed to the most threatening attacking player in the game, right? Yeah. Like the player who was like the most likely to get a goal or assist in the game.
Yeah.
And that has not stopped being true. And yet there's no way to watch him with your eyes, you know, and not feel like it's not the same as it was last year. You know, that it's kind of like that Riyad Mahrez season 4 years ago, that unbelievable season. That second year, it just was the magic. It wasn't quite there. And he actually bounced back the following season. But there's, I don't know. So
it's a good comparison.
Do you feel the same or?
I do feel the same. And the Mahrez thing is a good comparison because I think you saw his form after that miracle season with Leicester where, there would be mid-season pockets of form for Mahrez and everyone would sort of buy in on him, maybe get a few points here or there. And it's looking like that will likely be Salah this season. There will be a point midway through the season where Salah will go on a run and we'll have to ask this question again. I think you're one of two managers, right? You're a manager that doesn't have Salah and you're feeling fantastic right now, or you're like us and you're feeling miserable because we're just that close. We're that close to finally getting our due with him, but yet so far at this point. So it's a tough position to find ourselves in, and I am envious of the people who either never got on board or ditched Salah a few weeks ago, if only for the fact that it's kind of saving you one decision heading into game week 9. When I have to make my Ben Mee decision, now I'm stuck here making a Salah decision.
Yeah, this is where having the two frees helps, because I feel like I could make a move for Salah and then still make a move elsewhere. It's funny, the Salah to Mane move wasn't really something that I was considering until we started talking on the podcast. But I wonder if that, just given their fixtures, if that maybe is the way to go.
I think it has to be.
Let's say that Salah. Yeah, exactly. Because let's say that Salah doesn't play at Huddersfield, but the injury isn't that bad, right? So suddenly Salah plays in the Champions League game at midweek. Maybe he gets rested again the following week. You could be in a situation where you want to Salah and he actually starts playing again, but you still miss him for two Premier League fixtures.
Wow, dude, that's like a Japanese horror film you're describing to me right now.
Exactly. So, I mean, and we're still talking about a player who's blanked in three of the last four, too. Patience is a virtue. It's a real balancing act because, we had our 10 tips for FPL success at the start of the season. And, the first rule was it's like Fight Club, right? Like rule one is patience and rule two is patience. Mm-hmm. But, at some point you do have to acknowledge, that a player is not working out, and we don't just hold everybody for 38 weeks. Right. So, I mean, I think there is, we might be reaching that point with Salah, whether or not he's, whether or not the injury is, really severe.
Yeah, the alternative to Mane that people are coming around to online would be Shaqiri. And I find that one, that is just a punt. It's a punt that could work out, but I think Mane is much more assured if we're talking about like Firmino, perhaps another option to get in on the Liverpool strike force. Another curious thing, though, is the James Milner injury. And how is also that going to compound everything that's going on with the Liverpool attack? So suddenly we're in a situation where this Liverpool lineup in game week 9 could look remarkably different than anything we've seen all season.
Yeah, and it's sad that we can't even talk about Firmino, but he just does not look like the same player this season. I mean, 2 goals and 2 assists and 8 fixtures for him. I mean, this is a player who had, 15 goals and 8 assists last year, 11 goals and 11 assists the season before that. It is not the same Firmino. And I don't know if it's because he has to drop back more. I mean, Firmino doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's obsessed with scoring. I think we've seen that before. Like there was the moment last season where I can't remember who it was now. Was it Mane? He basically let someone score a goal, right? He had a tap in and he sort of lifted his foot and let the ball, roll in without touching it, which, that just for a striker is, antithetical to the way that they think about the game. I totally agree with you. I mean, Shaqiri is a complete non-starter. I have absolutely no desire to have him in my team. And God knows how many minutes you'd get from him, how often he'd start. It's just, I think the only move to me would be, if you're going to drop him, would be to Mane, or obviously to one of the Man City midfielders, if you don't have him already.
Yeah.
That being, Sterling, who's kind of the obvious choice, 11.1 million, or, I don't know about David Silva. You know, I mean, KDB is the real punty one. You know, he's 9.7 million. But as we said at the beginning of the podcast, I mean, is this guy starting? Like, is he starting in game week nine?
Even if he does start, I think it was Ben Dinnery's Twitter feed who counted the days. Last time KDB had a similar knee injury, he was out for 66 days, and he came back, started that next week, and scored in the 57th minute against Bournemouth, or at least played 57 minutes and scored a goal. So yeah. it's not at all outside the realm of possibility that KDB comes in and pours on the attacking points. But it's a punt, plain and simple. It's a punt.
Yeah, it's an expensive amount of money to spend on a punt.
I think we've got a more detailed section on mids coming up. But just to step back to the big picture question, I think for Ishan, the only reason I'm wildcarding right now is if I don't have Eden Hazard and I need team surgery. Beyond that, I don't see having made it through eight game weeks. I don't see why you couldn't just hold on to it a bit longer when some of these other looming questions that we hinted at earlier in the start of the show come to be answered.
Not knowing what his team looks like, it's a hard one to answer, obviously. But as someone who was in a similar position 2 weeks ago, where I did not need a wild card, and I had two free transfers and I could have just used those and shored up my team. And I decided to be a little bolder and just play the wild card. And I just felt like fundamentally my team was not where it needed to be. And I jumped from 150K to 15K. In two game weeks. And I feel like I really, I don't know. I just felt like it felt like the time was right to sort of invest in players who are about to rise, and like, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the overlooked teams. Like, maybe a wild card right now is the time when you load up on, I don't want to say load up. Maybe you pick up like a Newcastle player. Maybe you pick up a West Ham player. Maybe you pick up a Brighton player. And if you feel like your squad like on the bench isn't that strong, I went from no Wolverhampton players to three on my wild card, which felt very aggressive, but has worked out super well. So I don't know. I think there is something to be said for just wild carding now and just getting in early on some of these guys.
You just know, Ishan. You know when it's time.
Exactly.
Here's an interesting question. Here's an interesting question from Vinyl Richie talking about wildcarding or looking ahead. Vinyl Richie asks, the next 5 to 10 game weeks, it looks like viable captain options are players from Chelsea, Liverpool, and City due to consistent returns, high ceiling, form, and fixtures. Are there other captaincy options in those teams other than Hazard, Salah, and Aguero? Spurs and Kane are an outside shout, but I don't feel Kane is going to be owned by too many after this game week. So if you're looking to move some of your premium players around, are there any premium players outside of Hazard, Salah, and Aguero that we are targeting for captaincy options? Sterling would, of course, be a good place to start.
Yep. I mean, Man City play Burnley and Southampton at home in two of the next three fixtures. There are some Champions League considerations there as well, but right now my captain is on Aguero, and if I had Sterling and I didn't have Aguero, my captaincy would be on Sterling. So I think that he's definitely a consideration. KDB seems too risky to me. I mean, if he comes back in game week 9 and starts to play well, then I might consider, maybe not in game week 10 because they're away to Spurs, but game week 11, they're home to Southampton, and that's another match where you definitely would want a captain, one of your players from Man City. So I think that I actually feel a little undercovered with Man City right now, with just Aguero. I feel like this run of theirs where it's like they haven't, I guess they just played away to Liverpool, but it feels like they just have like an unending run of amazing home fixtures. This is some of the worst teams in the league.
No temptation of David Silva.
Well, it's just, I think his minutes are getting managed a lot. I mean, a guy in our mini league has had a great season, and that was kind of his Ben Mee move was bringing in David Silva, and it came back to cost him, cost him a little bit. And I just think, I don't know. I would rather pay the extra money for Sterling, or maybe if I couldn't quite get to that amount of money, then I would at least try to bring in KDB, because I would just rather have KDB over Sylvie, even if that is a bit of a punt.
All right. So do we consider Sadio Mane a captaincy option if we bring him in? Would you captain Sadio Mane in game week 9 against Huddersfield?
I don't know. Maybe game week 10 at home to Cardiff or game week 12 at home to Fulham. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's a form player. I mean, at the start of the first 3 weeks of the season, he was unbelievable, right? Yeah. I mean, he was like one of the best fantasy, like maybe next to Benjamin Mendy, like the best fantasy asset in the game. You know, his form dipped a little bit, but he did pick up an assist over the international break, which I know isn't much, but at least like proves that he's, you know, still attacking. And
Senegal, an assist is basically worth two goals. So I don't know if you've ever played Senegalese FPL, but.
I have actually. So it's you're very right. I mean, but you know, game week 12 at home to Fulham. I mean, Liverpool might score like 27 goals in that home match against Fulham. I really want to be tripled up on Liverpool going into game week 12, and then they play away to Watford in game week 13 too.
Yep.
I mean, someone like Andrew Robertson would be an interesting punt at home to Fulham in game week 12. So
yeah. So where are we on captain a defender shot? Because the only other Chelsea asset that jumps out to me apart from Hazard is Marcus Alonso.
Yeah.
His form has been a little different as of late. I pulled this from FPL Statistics Twitter feed. So first 4 game weeks of the season, Alonso has 134 touches in the final third. Game weeks 5 through 8, only 69 touches. Penalty area touches first 4 weeks, 16. And that's 3 penalty touches the last 4 weeks. And shots on goal, 12 through the first 4 game weeks, just 3 in the last 4. So it's a pretty stark comparison between the recent Alonso and the start of the season Alonso.
But if you had a 7 million midfielder who picked up 6 points in 2 of the last 3 fixtures, that would not be the area you'd be looking to move, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's got 2 clean sheets and 3, always a bit of a goal threat there. They play, you know, Burnley, Palace, and Everton in 3 of their next 4. To me, Alonso is not a problem. And he's owned by 46.1% of managers, too. So if you drop him and he does anything, you're in huge trouble, from an overall rank perspective. And really, even in your mini leagues, I'm sure that it would come back to hurt you. So, I just have no desire to drop Alonso at the moment.
Yeah, nor I. Okay, so captaincy, discussed. Consider not discussed.
Yeah. one last question before we move on to positions. There's a question about team structure from Lego Mane. He says, how important do you feel balanced team structure is? The past 2 seasons, I've largely ignored the mid-priced midfielders bracket in favor of heavy hitters and premium defenders. I feel this particular imbalance has wreaked havoc with my overall rank returns. So what do you think, Brandon?
Balance structure is key. Absolutely. And I think we're in great shape this season in terms of really decent mid-priced options in the midfield.
Yes.
And with strikers, one of our recent pods, we basically went down this epic list of strikers.
cheap strikers.
Yeah, cheap strikers. I mean, heading to the Amex, I had to make a choice between Arnie or Glenn Murray, and you were pushing me hard.
Were you ever really considering it? I was pushing Murray hard, but I don't know if you ever really bought it.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Yep. And then when he scored in the 30th minute, I wanted to look at you, but I stared stone faced straight ahead. I didn't want you to. I didn't want to get.
Yeah. Well, I made that nervous laugh of like, that was a lucky goal. Surely Arnie is going to do something in this match. When Brighton let West Ham play like for the entire second half, they just weren't able to do it. But yeah, tons of mid-price options. And Lego Mane, I feel like we need to be incredibly flexible this season. And I don't think at this point we could even say what the best formation it is that we play. 4-4-2, 3-5-2. I'm not so good at math. Anyway, basically week to week, you can play a different formation in your FPL side. And
this does feel like the season for a classic 3-4-3, though. I'm just looking at my team right now. I mean, I've got, you know, 1 expensive striker, 2 mid-price strikers. I've got 2 expensive midfielders, 2 mid-price midfielders, and 1 cheapie in Højbjerg at 4.5. two expensive defenders, one kind of mid-priced, and then two cheap. I mean, that is like the classic 3-4-3 kind of formation. You know, I guess the question is whether you know, whether we think that defenders are still the way to go. Like, I think that there is something to be said for a 4-3-3. I'm not, like, neither of us are like five at the back people. But I mean, you're certainly getting consistent enough attack and returns from those fullbacks. That it is the year of the fullback, Brandon, in case you didn't know.
I've seen the paperwork.
Do think that there's a patent is still pending. I need to get approved. So I do think you could go with four at the back, and I'm actually surprised I don't see more four at the back rotations. I think that that is a totally viable strategy.
Yeah, I agree. I had Ings for a while up front. And you have Raul Jimenez. We have strikers right now that are cheap enough where if you're not feeling them for a particular game week, you bench them and you go 4-4-2 or 3-5-2. It's no problem.
For Ings to go out of his way to make you feel okay.
He's such a great guy.
With that Ings to Arnie transfer. He was a great guy.
Dropping Ings for Arnie for a one-pointer, and then we're sitting at the Enterprise in Camden trying to recuperate. And Ings had numerous chances.
6-1.
Numerous chances.
Arsenal full impression. Yeah.
So I was relieved that Ings didn't bury me with a goal against Chelsea.
All right, Brandon, let's get right into, you did not get buried, and we're all happy for that. So let's keep talking about forwards. Juan Aguito says, is Laka a serious option?
Yeah, I suppose he is. I mean, if you're talking about form, Laka is right up there.
And if we're talking about a wild card, right? If you're talking about, if you're on a wild card right now, you know, if I was on a wild card right now, I would definitely be looking at Lacazette.
Yeah, and let's Arsenal's fixtures, Leicester, Palace, Liverpool in game week 11, which is a flag, and then Wolves and Bournemouth for the next two. Still great fixtures for him. Looks like he's got that position nailed. So, sure, yep. Why not? You can't make a case against it other than I've just got a bad feeling about Arsenal.
It was encouraging that Mkhitaryan, if you're a Lacazette owner, it was encouraging that Mkhitaryan and Lacazette played together. Now, granted, Mesut Ozil was out with one of his many illnesses and injuries, but
he's the Bob Duca of FPL. That's a joke that no one will get except you.
That no one, only Comedy Bang Bang fans will get that one. But going into the season, there was a feeling that Mkhitaryan and Lacazette were competing for the same spot. And the first couple of weeks, Lacazette came off the bench, and then Mkhitaryan was starting. And then I think it was that Cardiff fixture that was the first time that Lacazette started. And he earned a spot, and he hasn't lost it since. And it seems like the team is now sort of built around him in some ways, right?
Sure.
I mean, not built around him, but certainly built around formation with him as the central striker.
Yep. Him as a number nine. A number nine and an attacking team as attacking as Arsenal is great. So all for it.
9.6 million.
Ozil has got to be the biggest disappointment for me this season. As a human being, too. But he had so much potential. He's shown it a couple of game weeks. Of course, the game weeks after I drop him from my squad, but if he just had his head on right, and for whatever ailments he might have, he could just be the best FPL asset this season. But it is not to be.
I know. Yeah, he should be. Yeah, he and Kevin De Bruyne, right, should be like the great, like, 7-goal, 18-assist.
Yeah,
you know, right. Year in, year out assets. All right, so we both think he's an option. That his price point is a little tricky. I think it's hard to. It's hard to have him without on a wild card. You could do it without a wild card. For me, with two transfers, I was kind of thinking about it, but there's really no way for me to do it without making three transfers. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, God, am I really reinventing my entire team just to have Lacazette in it? Like, am I that sold on him?
Seems a bit much.
And the feeling is no, exactly. Although that is the interesting question about let's say we all drop Salah this week. Let's say it turns out that he's got a ACL tear and he's out for 6 months or something like that. Even if I free up cash, let's say I bring in 2 or 3 million, there's not to me an immediate place where I would put that money. Like, maybe I upgrade Madison to some, you know, I don't know. There's not like a logical, there's not like these like 8 million, 9 million midfielders and strikers that I'm like just dying to bring in. I guess I could like upgrade a defender to Robertson or something. Well,
we were just talking about the obvious thing to do. You upgrade one of your strikers to Lacazette.
Right. But I'm saying that it's even then it's too much money. Right. Like I would need more. Like if I upgraded, I guess I could upgrade Mitrovic to Lacazette. But is that even like, I don't know. That actually brings us to the next question. Yeah. From
what a segue. What a brilliant segue.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's like we organized that. It says the fire sale on Mitrovic is confusing. Fulham have some good looking fixtures coming up and he has due some goals. He's right at the top of Joe from Scouts goals eminent table. So he says, am I missing something?
Yeah, well, the fire sale on Mitrovic is because Fulham just look like complete relegation fodder at the moment. The team is a basket case. So I think that's why people are panicking with him.
Yeah,
I did catch.
Yeah. Brendan says this as a panicking Fulham fan.
Yeah. Every Fulham fan is slamming their hand on the panic button right now. I did happen to catch the second half of Serbia v. Romania in the League of Nations Cup.
Yeah, we all caught it, sure. Yeah.
And Mitrovic was doing his Mitrovic thing. He was softly chesting balls down in the penalty area and slapping them right at the keeper. So he is in form. The only problem, the only question is what kind of form is Fulham in? And if you look at their fixtures coming up, I do agree it's time to keep the faith with Mitrovic. Cardiff, Bournemouth, Huddersfield, these teams all have very soft defenses, and I'd expect him to return. And going back to the point you were going to make about dropping Lacazette or dropping Mitrovic for Lacazette, I think if everything goes Fulham's way, I think it would be pretty tight, sort of a wash between Lacazette and Mitrovic over the next four game weeks.
Yeah. With two transfers in hand, the move, if I do drop Salah this week, which I might do anyway, no matter what we find out injury wise, I think the move would actually be to hold on to one transfer and then have two next week and then decide whether or not to drop Mitra. I kind of feel like I'm going to give Mitra one last week, right? Like I just don't want to drop. Fulham they're an attacking team. His price is reasonable, and they're away to Cardiff in game week 9. It just doesn't feel like the right time to drop him. But I also will have if he blanks again. That's three blanks in a row when there are a lot of forwards that are scoring, a ton of goals. Mm-hmm. Like even going back to Josh King would be, a possibility I consider.
Yep. Fulham, as they're constituted under Djukanovic, the only way they're getting points in the league is by scoring goals. They're not going to win points by defending. My issue with Mitrovic will happen when Djukanovic gets fired. When he gets the sack, they'll bring in the standard save us from relegation tactic will be we're playing defense first. Yeah. And that's when I'll be going to be very scared of Mitro.
It worked for Leicester and they won the league the following season.
Yeah.
That is my second Leicester reference in one podcast, Brandon, to the legendary Leicester title winning team. Yeah. What I'm saying, Brandon, is in 2019-20, that season, Fulham will be the champions of the Premier League.
Wow, what a season that's going to be. I'll look forward to it.
That's good.
All right, we have a series of questions on Sergio Kun Aguero here. First one is from Jonathan Pedersen. Just one simple question. Aguero out and Lacazette in. Reason, Aguero always getting subbed out before 70 minutes and Lacazette is on fire. Does it worry you, this substitution pattern with Aguero?
No, not really. I mean, he's still scoring goals. If he wasn't scoring goals or racking up assists, then I guess I'd be more worried. But I mean, what am I going to drop Sergio Aguero before the Burnley home match and a Southampton home match in two of the next three? I mean, he took the international break off. It didn't play. He's been chilling in L.A., which, is, I don't know, that sounds like fun, right?
Sure.
And Jesus has been playing the internationals for Brazil. So Jesus has been busy. He's been chilling. He's going to come back rested. I mean, it's like the dream. I keep saying this. I mean, I know that he blanked away to Liverpool, but blanking away to Liverpool is there's no shame in that. And, before that blank, he had 8 points, 6 points, 7 points, 6 points, not to mention the 20 pointer at game week 2. Yeah. Five goals and four assists in the season. The season has only been a disappointment viewed through the lens of that 20-point haul in game week two. I mean, otherwise, yeah. It's a pretty solid it's better than Salah's season so far.
Yeah, I can see the argument where a lot of matches during the weekend, all the goals are getting scored in the last 20 minutes. But that's not the way Manchester City plays. Manchester City buries teams generally in the first half, particularly teams that are pushovers. And Aguero is not a guy who is going to get the one goal that he gets in the dying embers of the match. He's going to score four goals against Newcastle within the time frame of, what, like 22 minutes or whatever that is? Right. He doesn't require a whole lot of time. So I think he is a bit of an outlier where that's concerned.
Yeah, and he's just not that expensive, right? I mean, he's 11 million, but... I mean, at 11 million, that's like a five goals and four assists is a pretty solid return. You know, this is not like Robin Van Persie level 12.5 million. I'm doing like all deep cuts tonight, Brandon. you know, I think his price is reasonable. I think you're getting what you want for that price. And you also have two surefire opportunities to captain him in the next three game weeks. So, he's not going anywhere. The Lacazette thing to me is I would just try to get them both. But I do not consider Lacazette a replacement for Aguero.
Two more questions regarding another possible substitution for Aguero. FPL Drunk and Mark Perez asking the same question. Is Sterling cover for Aguero? So say you're dropping Aguero for Lacazette and then you bring in Sterling for Salah. Are you feeling at all comfortable with this? I think we'll agree that no.
Not really.
Not an emphatic no, I suppose.
Not an emphatic no. I think it's like doable, but not an emphatic no, but not something I want to do either.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's kind of a conservative answer there, but I just don't. It's not like a move I'm chomped at the bit. Partially because, as I mentioned before, I'm not totally sold on Lacazette still. I mean, he looked awesome in the match we saw. I mean, he scored a brace. He looked really dominant, but they were playing Fulham, you know?
Yeah.
I think that has to be factored in a little bit too. And, you know, 2 weeks off for the break, sometimes that, you know, that cools people down a little bit. So I don't know. I like Lacazette. I wish I had him on my team. But not over Aguero.
Yeah, Sterling is 11.1 million now. He only has three blanks on the season, and one of those blanks was in game week two, in which he just didn't play. So four goals and two assists. This isn't bad.
I think if you were just trying to like be conservative, not be clever, not overthink it, just moving straight up Salah to Sterling is the right move.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
If you're playing to be smart this season, that is, I think, the cleanest move.
Yeah.
You know, Mane may be a little, Mane is right there too. Just because, you know, I still trust that he's going to recover his form a little bit, but I don't know, like, does he get the same number of opportunities if Salah's not on the pitch? Right. Yeah. And if he's not like commanding so much attention from the opposing team.
Yeah. All right, last forward question comes from FPL Dylan. It's back to Glenn Murray. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I should have put a trigger warning on this one, Brandon.
Yeah, so I guess how do we answer this question? Let's think about, the three – well, there are a lot of strikers in this price range. You've got Callum Wilson and Josh King. You've got Arnie. You've got Mitrovic. You've got Glenn Murray. I don't know. Do you want to throw Troy Deeney in there just for the heck of it?
No, I don't. He's a Brazilian legend, Brandon Troy Deeney, but no, I don't want to do it.
Did Troy Deeney have to go to Brazil for the international break? It's not quite.
Yeah, he did.
So
yeah.
Where does Glenn Murray rank among the 6 to 7 million strike force for you? Is he top three? Is he top one?
Is he top one? No, he's not top.
What I'm asking you is, did I make the right move? Tell me, Daddy, that I made the right move taking Arnautovic over Glenn Murray long term.
I honestly don't know. I don't know if he did, but I don't think it's like a, I think it's like a coin flip. I mean, yeah, in the short term, it costs you 8 points, but long term, is it, you know, does that even out? Like, it may. I mean, the issue with Arnie is this knee, you know, like I'm still.
What knee?
I know he keeps playing but he's got a knee injury. He's left the match twice now in the season with a knee injury. Did play in the international, scored a goal. So, I mean, clearly he's probably fine. Where do I rank Murray? I mean, the fixtures are the biggest issue, though. They have great fixtures. And, you know, he's on pens. So, I mean, do I like him more than Jimenez, Ings, King? I mean, I actually think I probably do prefer Arnie over Murray. I might go Mitrovic, Arnie, Murray. Okay. That might be my order. Jimenez, I think, is great value just because he's so cheap. Sure. I don't think you get the same level of returns from him, but I like the Wolves attack. And I think if you were getting those kind of returns from a 5.5 million midfielder, you'd be thrilled. Yeah. You know, so I think you have to think of him as like more like a mid.
There's a little Olivier Giroud about Raul Jimenez, which I like. He's a good team player.
Also at the top of the goals have been at table, though, too. Had some great chances the last couple of matches. So, Jimenez, I think, is still a great option, especially at that price.
We've answered a lot of these midfielder questions already. FPL Boffin just sends in a bunch of screaming faces with Salah.
Yeah, let's just move past the midfield. I think we talked about it a lot already. Let's move on to defenders, Brandon.
Cool. FPL Jim kicks it off. Best defensive assets for the next four game weeks. You mentioned him earlier. I think it's Andy Robertson by a country mile. I think he is up there with the best defensive bets. You're looking at Liverpool's fixtures coming up. Huddersfield, yeah. Cardiff, Arsenal, Fulham, Watford. So, yeah, Andy Robertson definitely coming back around on Man City defense. Mendy is back from injury. Interesting.
A little worried about Mendy and Sané maybe playing, like maybe rotating starts a little bit.
Yep. So then you're on Kyle Walker. He's expensive, but he's a little more assured of starts.
Yeah, I think if you want to go non-fullback, I mean, I think Laporte has been proven to be a pretty consistent starter. He's kind of in that Otamendi role this year, where it seems like he kind of...
Yeah, except he can actually tackle.
Rotation. Yeah. Right, and he can score a little bit, too.
Yeah, one goal in the season so far. So, I think Laporte, Walker, and even Ederson, if you're looking in to switch up your goalkeeper, go a little more premium, I think all three of those guys are very viable options for the next four game weeks.
I still like I like the Wolves defense a lot. I mean, Rui Patricio, what is he, right up 4 bonus points in the last 2 matches. You know, I think the same way about Matt D and Johnny, if you want to be a little bit different. I think you pretty much nailed it, though. I still think Alonso is great, you know, is just a player that I have no issue holding on to at 7 million. I think that defense has proven to be a lot more solid than I expected it to be. And he just has, you know, ever present goal threat.
I think DeAndre Yedlin warrants a mention here too. We chimed in about Newcastle's great run coming up at 4.5. I think he's priced at now.
Yeah, it just feels weird. Yeah, I mean, we had a question about Andy Martin says, a time for one Newcastle asset. If yes, then which one? Yedlin is the one that I would look at too. I wish that LaSalle's was 4.5 million as well, in which case I would recommend him. Seems a little expensive at 5 million. The problem is I want Newcastle to win a game first. You know, it's like they're winless on the season. And I know that like we're talking about fantasy and not real life, but it makes me like wary of having any other players, you know, because I'm just like, I mean, win a game before I consider, bringing any of your players as fantasy assets.
Yeah. Matt Ritchie is the one player that kind of sticks out for me as a Newcastle player that I would want for this run. He hasn't done a whole lot this season, but he is that sort of, I mean, he's shy of talismanic stature at Newcastle.
Yeah, Kennedy at 4.9 million. You know, that's not a bad option.
I don't know, but Matt Ritchie, set piece guy, can strike a ball from outside the box. But yeah, 5.9, it's kind of a terrible price for him.
Yeah. And I feel like this whole Newcastle team is like won the award this season for team I've watched the least, you know, like I feel like I've barely watched any of their matches this season. I think I watched the Newcastle Cardiff match. And that was like one of the few I watched all year. They've just not had the Man City Liverpool match, or I mean the Man City Newcastle match too, but I think Brighton too, you know, kept a clean sheet at home to West Ham, also have a great run of fixtures. You know, I think their defense is, you know, I like Duffy maybe, right, who has like a little bit of goal threat. you know, cheap, right? 4.5 million. So
I dodged the price drop on Matty Ryan as my rotating goalkeeper. He was ever so close to dropping, and Brighton's fixtures have turned just in the nick of time for me.
Yep. Yep. Anthony Knockhart is also an option, or Ktryhard, as we call him. You know, 5.5 million is kind of in that Jimenez range where you're like, you don't need that much from him to justify, you know, having him in your squad.
West Ham is the other team that we perhaps are overlooking. Question from Tom Campbell: how do you guys feel about West Ham over the next few game weeks? Let's take Arnie out of it and look at the rest of the squad. Any options you like? This is a Is West Ham good enough for us to look past Arnie? Yarmolenko and Felipe Anderson? I don't think they're at that point yet. I think Arnie will have the most goal involvement. I'm not ready to consider West Ham beyond him.
I just wish they weren't so expensive. They're priced like a team like it's going to finish sixth this year or something. Like they're more expensive than like the Everton midfielders. Like how are Felipe Anderson and Yarmolenko both 6.8 million right now? It just seems like insanely high to me. West Ham weren't that good last season. It's just weird. I mean, I don't know how you could have really any. I mean, I actually have Fabianski on my team, and I think on a wild card, I think he rotates a little bit better with Patricio than Matt Ryan does. So I like if I was wild carding, I might go Fabianski and Patricio as a duo. But that's pretty much it. I mean, there's the defenders. I mean, who would you have? I don't know. I mean, like Zabaleta is down to 4.3 million, but there's really nobody.
We can save 5 minutes of this podcast by not even answering that question. Okay. But let's fill that 5 minutes with a little Sigurdsson talk, because Siggy didn't make it into the running order, but he has piqued my interest. He's returning to his old Swansea City heroic form. And at 7.4, he is actually more expensive than some of these West Ham guys. But how intriguing is him? Is he?
I don't know. Still not that intriguing to me. I'd rather have Richarlison. Richarlison landed up as a striker this last game week, and he's 0.7 million cheaper. So I don't know. I guess I don't trust Gylfi still. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's getting kind of old too. I don't know. I just like
this sounds like a guy who's heavily invested in Richarlison right now.
No. It sounds like a guy who's watched Gylfi the last year and a half at Everton basically suck. And you know, now he's starting together two good matches. I'm not feeling it yet. But I mean, I agree. I mean, I like Gylfi a lot as a player. I mean, I'm still sad that he basically resigned Swansea relegation by leaving the club last year. I'm just not totally sold.
I will not argue with you. I'm just totally not sold on that Everton team, full stop. Still putting Marco Silva squarely in that snake oil salesman category.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, Brandon, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with the lightning round and then a little bit of London trip talk.
All right, let's take a quick minute for our good friends at Starting 11. It's the daily fantasy app for your iPhone or Android in which you can put a fantasy Premier League team together and bet for cash prizes. Josh, while we were in London, we were able to walk into betting parlors, and Nick actually helped us place some bets on his own mobile phone, and it got our juices flowing in terms of gambling on Premier League.
It really did. And it was, you know, I ended up basically throwing my money away because I don't know anything about actual sports betting, but I do know a lot about fantasy, and people who are listening to this podcast also do. And so if I was to spend some money gambling on fantasy, I want to do it in a game that I understand. Starting 11 is the perfect outlet for it.
Absolutely. Cash games are live in the UK, US, Canada, and Germany for iOS phone. You can play for free on your Android. Cash games are coming soon, but you're exactly right. It's like a souped up version of FPL. You can play any day in which there are two or more Premier League matches. You have no budget restrictions. You can adjust your lineup right up until kickoff. So when those team sheets come out, you can adjust your lineup, and you get 3 in-game substitutions, so you can affect the outcome of your bets or your competitions with your friends on the fly. Mini leagues are coming soon to Starting 11, so look forward to that. And you can visit starting11.io for more information, or just go to your favorite app store, Google Play Store or iPhone App Store, and download the app today.
Yeah, exactly. And there's an old podcast from a couple weeks ago where you can listen to an interview with Starting 11 co-founder Thomas Braun, and you can learn more about the app. But as Brandon said, go to starting11.io to learn more. There's video tutorials that walk you through everything, make you feel like you, you know, walking into something that's really cool and fun and safe. So yeah, definitely check it out. Brandon, we're back. Part two, lightning round. Every question gets an answer, 30 seconds or less. Adam P., is the potential return of Lacazette worth the ruining of the hallowed pure watch as an Arsenal fan?
Absolutely. I mean, what's more fun than a pure watch than a watch in which your fantasy assets are scoring buckets of points?
Yeah, the pure watch is dead for me now. Every match seems to matter to me.
Have a fantasy asset, somebody else has a fantasy asset in the pure watch.
Somebody out there, exactly. Even Cardiff Huddersfield is a match where I'll be rooting for somebody. I'll be like, oh, someone's starting Sal Bamba this match. I can't let that.
Philip Billing, the most popular 4.5 fifth midfielder, could do something in this match.
FPL Wildcard says Lacazette or Vardy?
Ugh, this is a tricky one. Vardy definitely bubbling up right now. Let's see. Let's look at Leicester's fixtures coming up. Their Arsenal in game week 9. Then it's a nice run. West Ham, Cardiff, Burnley, Brighton. The question for me is, a lot of us are probably sitting on James Maddison. Do you feel like you want to double up on Leicester? And I think I err toward, no, I do not.
Yeah, I don't want to double up on them either. If I didn't have Maddison, let's say I had Frazier in that role, or just somebody else entirely. Vardy, I mean, his numbers are kind of strange because of that 3-game suspension. But he does have an 11-point return, an 8-point return in 2 of the last 3. You know, about as pure a goal scorer as there is in the league, maybe after Aguero. He's owned by 4.9% of managers. He's owned by nobody. Mm-hmm. So kind of a fun, wild card option if you want to make up some points, but not be insane in terms of how risky you want to be. And maybe you can't quite afford Lacazette. I think I like Vardy. Maybe answer this Arsenal thing. Although, God, Vardy loves scoring an Arsenal match, so I don't really see that as a problem either. I'm into it, but I agree that if you have Maddison, I don't think I'd be doubling up.
Hey, flip a coin, FPL wildcard. See what you get. Next question is from Harold. How do we feel about Zaha? Yay, nay, wait and see. That's a big nay from me.
Yeah, it's a big nay for me too. The real problem here is not Zaha so much as there's no one in the midfield to get him the ball. Mm-hmm. There's no link up play really. There's no attacking midfield. I mean, you have Andros Townsend, but Andros Townsend doesn't pass the ball. Andros Townsend, his whole goal is to score screamers from outside the box. He's basically worthless. I really don't like Andros Townsend, I have to say.
Playing with Andros Townsend is, for my FIFA friends out there, it's like getting into an online drop-in match, and Andros Townsend is the person on the other end of the internet connection that's just busy trying to break the game.
So, it's a nay for me as well. Brand, the London lightning round. We got to it real fast. Before we have three questions here. Before we even get to that, we went to four stadiums. Rank the stadiums for us, Brandon. Just to recap, we went to the Amex. We went to Wembley. We went to Craven Cottage. We went to Stamford Bridge. What was your favorite of the four?
Craven Cottage was not a disappointment at all. Everyone raved. This is one of the best grounds in London, if not the league. I loved it. I felt like I was in a totally holy, unique, welcoming, happy place. I loved it. Stamford Bridge is a close second. Same part of town. And as a Fulham fan, I know I should look down my nose at Chelsea. But we talked about this when we got inside the ground and found our seats. It felt like the perfect size, Stamford Bridge. It was big enough to where it felt like a competitive environment and intimidating, but it was small enough to where we felt close to the field. I mean, to see Hazard like that close to us in peak form, it was it was brilliant. And like I said, I really love their halftime beers, second to none. Wembley was very much an American experience. It was the height of luxury. It was stadium. Clean living. Yep. I mean, going with diehard Spurs fans, James and Rosie, they kept apologizing to us. Like, this is not the lane. This is not the experience we want you to have.
And seeing them play Cardiff, that may have skewed things as well, right? I mean, it was a very rainy day. Yeah. If you were a season ticket holder, if you're ever going to take a match off, it was probably that one, right?
Yeah, but that said, I mean, we got beers at the Center Circle, this bar right in the grounds with Nick, and it was so civilized. Everything was clean and nice, and they had nice beers on tap. So just for that alone, I would rank it above the Amex, which was the sleepiest ground we went to. It's a newer stadium, but it was a bit drab. The atmosphere was pretty flat. Except for,
I was surprised because I've heard great things. I know that, you know, I know that Brighton have a great, I don't know if it was because it was a Friday night match and it's a little bit different. It was also, you know, we were right next to the West Ham section and they were like going bonkers the whole game.
They sure were.
That might have been part of it. I got a very nice flag, which I was very excited about. I did have the worst burger of my life. a burger that I needed. We don't memorialize on our Facebook page, but
it was perhaps the driest sandwich I've ever put in my mouth. Yes.
I needed an entire pint just to get that beer down. We were so hungry. I did go to the bathroom and I was hungry. I was a mess at 8 o'clock that day. We'd been walking the city all day, but so I feel like I don't want to badmouth the Amex or Brighton fans, but I think I agree with you that of the four, that was my least favorite stadium experience. I will actually put Stamford Bridge above Craven Cottage. I mean, Craven Cottage was so cool. Like, it was just so neat to go through these like turnstiles that if you were like, you literally can't be a fan if you're too fat.
You can't be an always cheating listener with your 4XL t-shirt getting into the cottage.
In.
They were doors for hobbits. It was incredible. Yeah.
But I thought Stamford Bridge was the one that felt the most exciting, and that was for a Europa League match to Vidi, and I was like, wow, like this, no one's gonna be here, and it was sold out, crazy crowd. I was really charmed by the, and I'm not a Chelsea supporter at all, but I was really impressed, and like that is a stadium experience I would recommend to somebody if they were like, oh, I want to go to the UK and like watch like a real Premier League match. I think that'd be up there for me.
Yeah, for sure. All right, should we get to some of these questions we have about our trip?
Yeah.
First one here from Red Dagger. What was the ideal beer drinking formation during your trip to England? Did you down pints in groups of 4-4-2? What was your choice of premium beer? And did you leave those Amex Stadium burgers, coming back to those burgers, on the bench? That was my first free transfer. I got rid of my Amex burger. James Red Dagger, a lot
of
questions.
In my belly somehow. I don't know how I got through it.
Yeah. So what did you think about the drinking culture while we were in London?
It was great. I mean, you and I, like, we were drinking from noon the day we got there, and we didn't stop the entire time. It was fantastic. We found, was it Five Points?
Pale Ale was delicious. It was served at the pub that was right down the street from where we were staying in Camden Town. Also, speaking of Camden, we did go to a number of bars that had Camden Brewery beers on tap, which I found to be pretty delicious.
And we had the Edinburgh Castle had some great beers on tap as well. I was impressed with the whole bar culture there. It was very, the only issue is that it closes at 11 or whatever. In America, especially in New York, the bars are open until 4 a.m. So I was, we did end up at this bar called The World's End, which in Canada, which is really fun, and I kind of I crashed there, and I knew it was getting late because that was my second favorite moment of the trip, which is when we're all talking quietly and a very tall man that I had never seen at any point during the entire course of the meetup walks over, and you just go, Hamish,
my new best friend.
You run over to embrace your new best friend, Hamish, and Yeah, you were just like you and Hamish had like a real thing going on.
Hamish and I are now we're now hooked up on LinkedIn. I think we're going to go in on a small business together. So Hamish, I know you're wonderful. Out there listening. Send me your ideas. Let's make this happen.
So that was Jürgen Rockvog said, how do you deal with the pubs and the beer in the UK?
Sorry. One thing we noticed about pubs, though, was nobody works for tips. So we're used to bartenders being our new best friends here in the States because they're just milking you for as many tips as they can. There were some very unfeeling, uncaring bartenders in England. I'm fine with that. But it was just strange to adjust.
Yeah, it was harder for me, I think. I am used to, like, I have a disproportionate love of good customer service. But, yeah, I thought the service was fine. Yeah, we had that – just the one waitress that you're talking about. I can remember her.
You know who you are.
Clearly still. KGFPL says, would you watch Fulham v. Arsenal? Did you sit with the home or away fans? Just wondering which of you had to keep quiet when the first goal went in. I says, I don't think I can manage to keep my reactions to the checks. So fair play to you both. We were very much in the Fulham section. Yeah. The Johnny Haynes stand.
Yeah.
We're in the fourth row. It turned out we were in the row right before the row where you got dripped on by the stadium.
Yeah.
By the overhang.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in the home section. We were still firmly in the anti Anguissa section. Just to be clear about that, it was great.
They didn't love Sarri either. It was it was not a great time to be
As an Arsenal supporter. I think you were on your best behavior, though. I did notice numerous times you were nodding your head and tapping your feet enthusiastically to the beat of Arsenal chants in the away section.
It was a good. I was impressed with the away. The away support was very solid there as well. Actually, slightly better than the West Ham away support, I think. It was. Granted, it was a little bit closer, distance wise. But yeah, I thought I was impressed with Nacho Monreal and how angry he was. I mean, he was yelling at shadows. It was like he just ran around screaming. I mean,
he was basically playing in right field the entire game. Or let's use a baseball metaphor. Like he just had no worries or concerns except for what his teammates were doing clear on the other side of the pitch.
Yeah, well, very, very
angry. My favorite moment, though, I mean, it was a drubbing to end all drubbings for Fulham, but at least for us to be in the home section for Fulham, and Schürrle's goal was a tying goal. It was a goal that at that point in time, it mattered. So it was fulfilling for me to be in that environment and to cheer with my fellow Fulham supporters, a home goal that mattered at that time. So that was really thrilling and one of the high points.
We got to go into halftime with a 1-1 draw. It felt like everything was still possible. And it was just nice to see it more than one goal. I mean, that was the first three games we'd gone to were all 1-0s. So to have to have more than one goal in a match was a change of pace.
Yeah, exactly. So would we
– any final takeaways, though?
Yeah, would we do it again? I mean, it was a feat of logistics for us to do the four matches in 4 days. It took a home Europa match for a London team, I think, for us to lock in that fourth match. I mean, my takeaway is – I'm just glad that we've done it. Some people would ask, will we now watch games differently here in the States on television? And we've both been watching the Premier League for a decade now. We're huge diehard fans.
Longer, yeah.
We understand the game, but I think I now will feel much more emotionally, not to sound really corny, but I think I'll be more emotionally connected to what I'm seeing on TV now, seeing a lot of this pitch level. So I think it was really worthwhile and exciting for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we watched the Fulham Arsenal match, and then, you know, even though we were in London for only one last day, we decided to just go to the bar and watch even more matches once that was done. I have to admit, I feel bad because there were some people like Andy, two Andys, Andy Goodlin and Andy Burnby, who we both talked about watching matches with, and I had to beg off. I mean, I was really,
We had to go sit in a pub alone in silence and sort of just mentally, emotionally recover from the last 4 days. Yeah.
Although the feat of ingenuity for us to somehow watch like 65 minutes of Man United Newcastle and miss all five of the goals. That was pretty impressive. Yeah, we got there just after the second goal was scored and left right before the final three were scored.
Manchester United will disappoint fans in any which way.
Yeah, I think if we did it again, I think I would probably – I would try to arrange – I mean, we got kind of lucky this time because the Friday night match – and the Europa League match, you know, gave us a chance. I mean, it's not easy to see four matches in 4 days in the UK in general, but I guess you go the other way. You could do Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday if there was a Monday fixture, and Tuesday with the
Champions League
match. But I think if we did it again, I would want to fly, maybe even fly into Liverpool or Manchester, spend a day or two there, and then take a train down and spend the second half of the trip in London. You know, I really want to get the Northern experience as well. I think that's the one thing we didn't get in the UK.
We just have to start checking all these grounds off of our list. So we'll get the always cheating Premier League ground passport together.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go to the new Spurs stadium. You know, obviously I didn't get a chance to go to the Emirates. You know, I mean, to go to Anfield would be, you know, amazing. So so I think, you know, the goal I think is to get back there, you know, as soon as possible. If not next year, then definitely by the following year.
All right. Should we talk quickly about game week 9, the matter at hand? I do know you fancy yourself a real Rick Steves of the UK, but maybe we should just for our listeners preview game week 9. So your captaincy is on Man City all the way. If we get news that Salah will likely start for Liverpool, are you considering captaining Salah against Huddersfield?
No, I'm not. It'd be too risky, I think. Even if he was fit, he might be rested anyway, you know, just to be safe. So I don't see I mean, to me, the bigger question is Hazard at home to Man United. Mm-hmm. He's the one that I would consider captaining over Salah.
What an exceptional humiliation for Jose. I mean, I don't know if it's possible for Jose Mourinho to be humiliated more than he has in recent memory. Like, maybe he's just immune to all that. But for Chelsea to just annihilate him at Stamford Bridge would be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it could happen. I don't really want to captain Hazard for that one because I don't. It's not even so much that it's the first match of the weekend, although that is a slight factor. I won't pretend it's not. But I think part of it is I would kind of believe any range of score lines there. Yeah. I don't necessarily see it as one where Hazard gets a brace. I mean, it wouldn't stun me if that's what happened, but I could see him scoring. It just seems a little too risky when you've got Aguero at home to Burnley.
Yeah, and the likelihood that Jose sets up for sort of damage limitation at Stamford Bridge, the anti-humiliation formation is definitely likely. I have my captaincy and my bus team on Salah right now. The injury news, I think, definitely, like, emphatically steers me away from him. As you're saying, Josh, like, regardless of the outcome of any pressers. And Mitrovic, the perpetual vice captain, when you do the season roll up of this is who was most captained in your squad, this is who was most vice captained, I think Mitro is going to be my most vice captained for the season.
Okay, I have one last thought looking at these fixtures. I think in some ways it's pretty straightforward otherwise, right? I mean, is there any other matches you want to talk about that you're particularly interested in? I mean, Chelsea, Man United is, we talked about that a little bit, but
I will say Fulham Cardiff will be a big test. It's a big test in the league, and it will be a big FPL test because if Mitro blanks, he's out for everyone, I would assume. So definitely watching that one closely. Bournemouth, Southampton could be a breakout game for Bournemouth attacker owners and King Wilson. Yeah. Fraser has been a little quiet.
How many
quiet
more breakout games do they need? It's like, it's amazing how many good matches they've had.
Yeah, not to say that they haven't, but I know there is kind of a I think Fraser is kind of a differential in the top 100K for some people at this point.
Yeah, I think so. He's flagged right now. I don't know if that's like the same minor knock that he had last time. I mean, I don't see that as a big concern.
Yeah.
It would be really tempting to just move Mitro back to Josh, to just go back to Josh King. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, their next two fixtures are so good. Home to Southampton, away to Fulham. Not having any Bournemouth coverage, I'm feeling a little anxious about that one. I would like to have somebody. I don't really realistically think I will, but it would be nice.
Yeah. West Ham Spurs is going to be an exciting, interesting match. I'm not sure how to predict that one, particularly with Spurs being away.
Yeah.
Hard one to call.
See that as a Spurs win. Yeah. Yeah, I see that as a Spurs win. They've sort of found a way this year. It's a veteran team, you know, even with the injuries. It feels like they're grinding it out right now.
Yeah, and Eriksen could conceivably be back for this match.
Is that right? I thought it was going to be a little longer than that, but yeah. So that would definitely change things too. It's just having a Spurs midfielder who you could bring into your team would be a change, right? I mean, I think Lucas Moura now feels like the kind of the fun is over with him. I don't know. I feel like it'd be nice to have Eriksen back, but obviously you can't bring him in going into a game like that.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And then the one last question is just the Arsenal play Leicester on Monday. And just a question for anybody who's still listening this long into the podcast. Would you prefer that we did a Sunday night podcast that was available for you to listen to Monday morning, even if it meant that we didn't talk about Arsenal Leicester? Or would you prefer that we waited until all 10 matches were done and do a podcast that Monday night? Because I'm sort of like, if it's a huge match, like I feel like there's like I think Spurs Man City is next weekend on a Monday. That's a little different, I feel like. But for a match like that, it has some fantasy implications, but not huge. I'm just curious whether people like having the Monday morning pod or if it doesn't really matter to them. They just listen on Tuesday.
Here's the third option. Would people prefer that we podcast every night?
Yeah. That's, I think I would definitely get divorced. I would be divorced. Yeah.
Okay. I hope we helped people in their decision making. I think there's a lot to think about going into game week nine.
A lot of balls in the air right now.
Good luck to everyone.
Yeah. Good luck. And once again, it's great to meet so many of you. On Saturday last weekend, really great experience. We didn't even talk about, FPL Duke and, we did talk about Hamish, I'm happy about
It's all about Hamish. Plonker, Chancer, yeah. Jeff Willis, Jeff Petter. Like you said, there's no way to go down this list without leaving people out. I mean, we met Tom Cantle.
3-5
we met, we yeah, met Tom yeah. Cantle, but also his podcasting partner, Nick. And
Tom Campbell. We didn't talk about tall Tom Campbell. Well, he was a good foot taller than I was expecting.
What a tall off with Hamish and Tom Campbell.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Good luck this weekend.
One last shout out. Aaron Boyle, who gave us a tour of the Lloyds of London building. Aaron, I hope you're listening. You are a god among men, and we can't thank you enough for your hospitality.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. Yeah, thank you, Aaron. And if you want to hear more about the trip, we actually did a couple of dispatches that we posted on our Slack page for Patreon supporters. So if you pop on there, you can listen to some of our daily dispatches when we were in the UK.
Perfect segue into our sign-off, Josh. Become a Patreon supporter of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Our producer thank yous, as usual, Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Sam Streak, Jacob Roberts, Nick Costello, Carls Rasmus, Lean Granley, Chris Howell, Rafi Khan, Martin Savage, Rick Brailsford, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Max Chamberlain, Brian T., and Trevor Ingerson. Josh, you have to subscribe if you haven't already to the Always Cheating Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Acast, TuneIn, Pocket Cast, wherever you get your podcasts except Spotify. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave a review if you'd be so kind. Also, follow us where, Joshua?
On Twitter, at Hail Cheaters. That's H-A-I-L Cheaters. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/alwayscheating. Email us anytime, hailcheaters@gmail.com. And visit our website for all this information and more. Alwayscheating.com is that link.
Beautiful. And I will leave you by saying Poku forever.
Yes. And I will say Hail London, Brandon. That's my final words for this week's podcast. Hail London.
London is calling. And we'll be back next week with another podcast. Also, we'll go back to London.